Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have promised to be a hype-free show here during this offseason, and I would say that some days we probably do better than that than at others. This may feel like we're once again veering in the direction of hype, but I think that you'll see, once the conversation's done, there's a very specific reason we bring this up. Obviously, big expectations for Georgia quarterback JT Daniels for the upcoming year, both in terms of what the national folks kind of think about this, what Georgia fans themselves believe, a possibility for Daniels as he gets ready to move into his first full year as the starting quarterback at Georgia. Latest example of that, our friends over at Athlon Sports, a website that I've always liked, a preseason publication that I've always liked, they have their list, I want to make sure I get the headline correctly here, projecting some of college football's next stars at quarterback in 2021. So kind of an exciting thing. That's a list you'd expect to see JT Daniels on. I do want to kind of pull out and give you kind of a brief aside here for a moment, sidebar, if you will. So when Athlon Sports kind of goes into all of this, they put all of these quarterbacks in alphabetical order. Now, far be it for me to tell somebody else how to kind of run their content machine. But, you know, I don't think in the off-season desert barren wasteland of college football news, you never put something in alphabetical order when you could otherwise rank them, because ranking them just gives us a chance to have that debate about who was number four and who was number five. By putting them in alphabetical order, you're missing out on some sweet hot takes and some you know, embrace debate opportunities you otherwise would have. But nonetheless, Daniels comes here in the D section. If you're interested, ahead of Max Dugan from TCU's last name also begins with a D. Let me read just a little bit of what Athlon says about JT Daniels. This will lead us to a conversation here today. Athlon Sports says just how important was Daniels to Georgia's offense in 2020. Consider this, they say. The Bulldogs averaged 29 points a game when he wasn't the starter and 37.3 when he was the starter for the four games that he was. He says the four best performances from Georgia's offense in yards per play from 2020 all came when Daniels was under center. They go on to say, assuming that Daniels picks up where he left off, the junior will rank as one of the SEC's top signal callers and push Georgia into national championship contention once again. Now, this is not new information. We kind of all understand that that is the thought process that's out there. Wow, wasn't perfect for Georgia in the four games that Daniel started, but it was certainly a glimpse of what might be when you kind of think of the possibility of what could happen for a full year for JT Daniels at Georgia. And in fact, it may have been at the heart of what Cole Kubelik said when he joined the Paul Feinbaum show last week. Now, yesterday when I talked about this, I kind of talked about this more from the standpoint of, you know, how Georgia compares in the SEC East and how Florida not getting a Rick Gilbert hurts their chances of staying in contention in the division, a division the Gators won a year ago. And for the most part, yesterday, we kind of sidestepped the whole idea of Kubelik's belief that Georgia could be the very best team in the country for this upcoming season. But with Athlon Sports saying nice things about JT Daniels, with Kubelik echoing some of that when he was on the Feinbaum show last week, let's kind of revisit Cole's remarks here and look at this from the standpoint of just exactly how Georgia does compare to the top national contenders. This is Cole Kubelik. You heard this yesterday. Here's a reminder.
What about the East, Cole?
I think it's Georgia's to lose, Paul, and I'll be honest, I'm not sure I see another team that really is going to be very close. Georgia's got the best defensive line in college football returning. I know there's holes in the secondary. Good, talented offensive line. Coach Luke will have those guys ready. Washington back at tight end. Big physical target that can help you do different things. You got all kind of weapons at wide receiver. With Burton and Pickens back, I think that group's going to be phenomenal. And now you know who your quarterback is. Last year it was, well, can we just get by with this walk-on? Are we waiting for our real starter to be healthy? Do we want to keep another quarterback on the roster? Now Coach Monken can go through this entire offseason knowing exactly who his guy is and exactly what that offense is going to look like. Paul, I might have Georgia as my number one team in college football right now heading into the season, and I'm not sure there's another team that's really going to be close to them in the East.
So Cole Kublik almost takes it even a step further than what Athlon Sports says about JT Daniels. Cole, I would say, would agree with the Athlon Sports assessment, but he takes it to the step of saying, in fact, Daniels may be so good and the situation at quarterback may be so solid that Georgia may now be the very best team in the country. Now, I would say that this year is a pretty good year around the country to have a solid situation at quarterback and a returning offensive coordinator. That's something that Alabama can't say. They're breaking in a new signal caller. They're breaking in a new offensive coordinator. Clemson, even though most of us have seen DJ Uiagalelei and expect good things from him, he is at least stepping into his first full year as starting quarterback. This isn't the situation that's been the last couple of years with Trevor Lawrence firmly entrenched there. There's at least some question about what Uiagalelei brings to Clemson. Same thing for Ohio State. College football playoff mainstay, Justin Fields is gone. There's probably actually two or three guys competing to be starting quarterback there in Columbus. So this is probably a pretty good year for Georgia to have that situation at quarterback. But I'm still, and this is the reason why, as I said off the top of the program, when we're trying to have as much of a hype-free offseason as we can, is I don't know what to do with what Cole Kublik said, nor do I know what to do with what Athlon Sports about JT Daniels. All of this could be true. It's certainly a possibility given what you saw from Daniels, but the task itself is so daunting that you want to show full respect for it. Now, the good news is how good Daniels is, how good George is. We don't have to wait very long to find out. Obviously, Clemson in week one gives you a big measuring stick opportunity there, but the thing that you're measuring is so prolific in terms of the needed offensive firepower that I think you have to give the job full respect. In fact, let me take this a step further, and this is really the reason why I bring up all of this on today's show. People say, hey, JT Daniels may be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Georgia may be the best team in the country. But let's talk specifically about what that means. You know, last week on the show, I kind of addressed the needed wide receiver play that you have to keep pace with what Alabama had a year ago with Devontae Smith, what LSU had the previous year, you know, in 2019 with the Blitnikoff Award winner Jamar Chase, what Clemson had in 2018 with Justin Ross, who, by the way, is back for the 2021 season. That primetime wide receiver performance has just been higher than anything that Georgia's had thus far under Kirby Smart. But when you look a little deeper, and this kind of came up on our comments section yesterday, we do an R.S. Andrews cooldown on video where we kind of take some comments on both Facebook and YouTube, and folks were talking about the need for a big performance from the number two wide receiver to go along with what you expect to get from George Pickens, who you assume over the course of a full year will be Georgia's leading receiver, although he wasn't a year ago because he missed some time. And this is another example of how the very best offenses in the country really separate themselves with their number two receiver. Now, keep this in mind for a moment. The most receiving yards that any receiver has had for Georgia in the Kirby Smart era was in 2019 when George Pickens had 727 yards receiving. That's the high watermark for Georgia when it comes to wide receiver play. What I'm about to read you is the number two wide receiver on the last three national champions. Last year, John Metchie had 916 yards receiving as the number two receiver for Alabama. This after Jalen Waddle got injured. The year before that, Justin Jefferson for LSU, do you realize he had 1,540 receiving yards as LSU's number two receiver? T. Higgins for Clemson 2018 had 936 yards before that. So this is one of the reasons why I don't like jump up and down when Cole Kublik says Georgia best team in the country, and why I obviously enjoy seeing Athlon Sports praise JT Daniels. But the idea that Georgia takes that next prolific step towards the very top of the offensive, you know, firepower than in college football, the reason why I don't like jump up and down and say, boy, that's definitely going to happen, is that's really, really hard. You're basically asking for Georgia's number two receiver this upcoming season to be better than the best receiver so far in the Kirby Smart era for Georgia to look like recent national championships teams have looked. I'm not saying it's impossible. I am saying it's just a very, very difficult task. Now, let me try to finish this particular conversation on a positive note, because when we can spin it back to the positive, we obviously like to. The really good news for Georgia is that if number two receivers having dynamic explosive seasons are crucial for national championship success, I actually don't believe that Georgia has ever been in a better situation to do that with what it's likely number two receiver could be this year. Who is that guy? I would suggest there are maybe three potential candidates here. You may expand that list out, and maybe I'm wrong for not doing so. You know, you look at Kyrius Jackson last year. He did have two games in a row, which he exceeded 100 yards receiving. He actually ended up being, by receiving yards, the leading receiver for Georgia a year ago. But 100-yard receiving games have not been a regularity for Georgia under Smarn. Jackson had two of those last year. So when you think about big season for a number two receiver, given what Kiaris has done before, he would have to be a factor in that discussion. Jermaine Burton, I kind of forgotten about this. You know, he had 197 yards receiving against Mississippi State, came with an eyelash of setting a school record. I'd kind of forgotten that had happened. But pretty clearly, that's a guy that's shown you a glimpse that he may be able to do even bigger things for this upcoming season. I'd say Dominic Blaylock here as well, coming back from injury because of how good he was as a freshman in 2019. And as I said before, I'm kind of leaning on the guys who've kind of been there and done that. You may say, well, B.A., what about Arian Smith? That's a guy that showed you so much speed. You've got to include him there as well, and maybe you do. My list was kind of focusing more on guys that I've truly seen do it at a big-time high level, but obviously a guy like Arian Smith, and maybe even others as well, they are certainly worth, you know, considering on this list. So let me see if I can kind of wrap this up. You know, obviously, Daniel's got a great chance to be as good as the best quarterbacks in the country. And if that's true, then Georgia has a chance to be as good as the best offenses are in the entire country. But one of the reasons why we try to tiptoe around the hype a little bit is to be as good as the best offenses in college over the last couple of years requires an awful, awful lot of success. Not just a big-time performance from your best wide receiver, but an extraordinary performance from your number two wide receiver. It is not an easy thing to pull off. Now, with that said, let me kind of completely shift gears and talk about something totally different for a moment. Yesterday, we talked a lot about Rick Gilbert on the show, the former five-star tight end who signed with LSU, announced his transfer to Florida, changed his mind, and obviously anybody who doesn't want to live in Gainesville, Florida, I would say is plenty smart enough in my book. But some folks ask, B.A., are we going to talk about Rick Gilbert on this show every day now? Well, the answer to that question is obviously no. We will address this when there is news to address. But I did want to bring up one thing here. That Gilbert's mentor, our good friend in our show, Terrence Edwards, the great former Georgia wide receiver who's been joining us every week here on the program now for quite some time. He knows Gilbert, having personally trained him. Yesterday, the subject came up of what's next for Gilbert after the decommitment from Florida. I thought what Terrence Edwards put on Twitter yesterday was worth us mentioning on this show here today. So Mike Farrell's a national recruiting reporter. He was doing a piece of content, and his tease for this on Twitter was, will a Rick Gilbert end up at Georgia after all? Farrell asks. He says that and much more in a piece of content that he was doing. And Terrence Edwards responds to this tweet by saying, no one knows where a Rick Gilbert will end up. And I think the fact that Edwards says that so matter-of-factly is really important here. Edwards has dined with Gilbert within the last few weeks, and he told us that on the show a couple of weeks ago. So Terrence is still, to the best of my knowledge, in regular contact with Rick Gilbert. If Edwards says, I don't know where he's going to go, in fact, no one does, I would certainly take that to mean something here right now. I love the talent. I've said before, I think there's a narrative that's being constructed around Rick Gilbert that I think is unfair. I have no idea if he ends up at Georgia, nor do I know where he's going to end up at all. But I did think what Terrence Edwards said there was an important addendum to this discussion, that right now there is a bunch of mystery surrounding what a Rick Gilbert might eventually do. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Good to have you with us. All kinds of video platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, radio, of course, at noon every single day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, podcast on the Apple Player, the Google Player, Spotify, all the different ways that folks check in with the program. We just really appreciate you being a part of, and a huge thanks to our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, ESOG, the name to know when it comes to foundation waterproofing issues. This is a very significant issue. It's the kind of thing that homeowners know can really impact the structural integrity of your home. So when water creeps in, that's a problem. It's something that's not going to just get better on its own. You got to do something about that. So when it rains, and it has lately, you see those wet spots show up, you know, garage, crawl space, basement, wherever else. Or if you see those horizontal cracks, or really any kind of crack showing up in your foundation, that's the sign that you need smart people doing good work for you. And I love recommending Engineered Solutions of Georgia because, first of all, they're proud partners of UGA. And it's always fun to support companies that are supporting the Georgia Bulldogs. But beyond that, they've been good friends of ours here at Dog Nation for an awful long time, and I'm really proud to help tell their story here. So they've got two full-time engineers on staff. They are dedicated to your foundation waterproofing issues, and they are very easy to get in touch with. You can give them a call. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That number once again, 678-ESOG now, and that'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We have a really fun conversation coming up with Connor Riley here in just a moment. Before we do that, though, I do want to go around the doghouse here. I want to talk about Darian Kendrick. That's a name that you read about over the weekend at DogNation.com, former big-time defensive back recruit who's been at Clemson and has now reportedly left the Clemson program and could be on his way to the transfer portal. And listen, we have done this now 1,000 times over the course of this offseason alone, given the fact that Georgia has a big need at defensive back and given the fact that Georgia has utilized the transfer portal before. Every single name of defensive back that has had some success or has had some pedigree that kind of shows up either near the transfer portal or actually in the transfer portal, there will be an attempt, I think, on shows like this to wonder, well, could this guy be a fit at UGA? And in the situation with Kendrick, that's no different there. And, you know, there's also this kind of pushback to that of a lot of people want to say, well, what's the reason why he's leaving Clemson? You know, what's going on there? What are Clemson message boards saying about all of this? And listen, let me give you my opinion pretty succinctly on this. I've said before that if Georgia does not bring in a transfer defensive back of some variety, I'll be fine with that. Georgia's obviously got talent in that room already, and maybe giving those guys a chance is kind of what makes the most sense here. But if Georgia does look to do that, I wouldn't be too quick to be too worried about why so-and-so player is leaving whatever school that he was at, Kendrick from Clemson here included. The fact of the matter is, if everything was going great at the previous school, these guys wouldn't even be in the transfer portal. You know, the reason why someone decides to transfer to begin with is because something about their current situation is not to their liking or it's not quite working out there. So, you know, I'd be really careful with all of that all the way around, that if there's a chance to bring in Kendrick, I think it's probably something that Georgia ought to explore. But beyond that, and this is where things are about to get a little bit weird here for a moment, I think there is a potential gamesmanship aspect that Georgia could potentially think about when it comes to Kendrick. And listen, for about 1 minute here, we're going to get pretty conspiratorial. You know, normally we talk about UGA. For the next 60 seconds, we're going to talk about QGA, because I think that there is a very interesting narrative that's been out there related to Clemson lately. In fact, let me kind of bring in some kind of, you know, conspiratorial type music here for a moment and, you know, kind of bring this as part of the discussion. If you go back to 2017, I mentioned Athlon Sports a moment ago. You know, Athlon back in 2017 in its preseason preview of Clemson, there was an anonymous coach who was quoted in that preseason magazine saying that Clemson was very well known for sign stealing. We talked about this, you know, back around the college football playoff, that Clemson was very good at kind of spotting defensive signals and using that to their advantage, offensive signals and using that to their advantage, that Clemson was kind of a master sign stealer. And that came up again this year when Rhett Lashley, the Miami offensive coordinator, also kind of brought that back up again, really in no uncertain terms, that Clemson, when you played Clemson, the thing you got to be aware of is that they were, you know, potentially looking to steal your signs. You got to be very careful about that. That's just part of the gamesmanship for Clemson. We don't really know if, you know, how they're doing that, if it's just, you know, regularly, naturally, you know, just good at spotting what's happening on the other sideline, or they're doing something more technological than that. It doesn't really seem like it kind of veers in the direction of what the Houston Astros have done. But this has been talked about in 2017, was talked about by Rhett Lashley this past season. And it was even talked about more in the college football playoff, where Ohio State was seemingly aware of all of this. And there were, Justin Fields himself said after the game, and listen, Ohio State had great success against Clemson in that college football playoff game. And one of the things that Fields said Clemson, that Ohio State had done, is they had huddled more frequently against Clemson than they typically do against other teams, because they were on guard against Clemson potentially stealing their signs. So if you bring in Darian Kendrick to Georgia, is there a chance that he could help negate what Clemson, at least according to Rhett Lashley, Athlon Sports in 2017, Ohio State from this past January, three different sources at least who've been willing to go on the record and say, hey, you know, we see a Clemson team that's looking to steal signs, that's looking to get that sideline advantage, know what's coming, running the football, passing the football, defensive signal, whatever else. So keep that in mind, that if you bring in a player from Clemson, there could be the additional value in the week one game of somebody who's at least somewhat aware of what Clemson's done in the past, and maybe a way for Georgia to kind of respond to some of that gamesmanship with a little bit of a clue of what's going on the Clemson sideline there as well. So that's our conspiratorial idea about Georgia Clemson here for a moment, and potentially an additional value if Georgia wants to go after Kendrick there from Clemson. All right. With all of this in mind, how active will Georgia be in the transfer portal as you head towards the next few months? Connor Raleigh had a great story up on that at dognation.com, so we'll get a chance to hear from him on that and so much more. Of course, it's great to have all of you with us here on Dog Nation Daily today. In fact, let's get ready to do a Kroger Fresh Take with Connor Raleigh right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So Kroger Fresh Take time. We'll bring on Connor Raleigh here. As I said before, two big kind of names kind of mentioned as possible transfers, both for different reasons. It'll be easy to draw a line, connect them to Georgia. But, you know, as we've seen before, you know, Kirby Smart, A, keeps his cards close to the vest on all of this, and B, you know, has kind of shown you he's not necessarily interested in being as active in the transfer portal as maybe some other programs are. So, Connor, first of all, bottom line on this, how interested now do you think Georgia might be in Rick Gilbert, a name I mentioned a moment ago, and, you know, Kendrick upon what we expect to be a trip to the transfer portal for him after reportedly no longer being with Clemson?
QGA. Did you leave your tinfoil hat at home? Just forget to bring that in with you?
Listen, you got to do a little conspiratorial music. You got to do a little tinfoil hat. You know, every now and then you have to play to the, you have to play to the masses.
I think there are two different sort of ways to look at the two players, Gilbert leaving Florida, Kendrick leaving Clemson. I think we'll start with Gilbert here because I think right now this is probably the more clearer of the two. Rick Gilbert has to figure some things out. It sounds like things are not going very well for him right now. This is nothing to do with football. This is away from the football field. It sounds like he didn't have a great time at the end of his freshman year at LSU, and so I think he needs to figure himself out before reprioritizing the game of football. And I hope that he eventually does go into that because he is a phenomenal football player, and I hope that he does what he needs and wants to do to get his life in order to where he can be a contributor at a D1 football school. As far as Kendrick, it'll be interesting because it's hard to imagine a cornerback with better credentials becoming available on the transfer portal. All ACC selection in the last two seasons, yeah, has played in college football playoff games, has played in a national championship game, knows what it is like to play on a big stage and a big-time starter for a program.
Internet will tell you he did not play well against Ohio State.
No, he didn't, but no, other than Trevor Lawrence, what player did play well for Clemson against Ohio State? So I think with that in mind, it'll be interesting to see how aggressive UGA is in pursuing a player like Kendrick. Obviously, he was suspended for a game last season for, you know, violation of team rules. They kept that in-house. And then obviously he's dismissed from the team with no real concrete reason as to why. So it'll be interesting to see. I know Dabo Swinney had said yesterday, sometimes it's just time for a change and we need to go in different directions. With Georgia opening the season against Clemson, it'll be interesting to see how aggressive Georgia chooses to be in this, because I've sort of held the belief that Georgia's going to be patient and wait to see what type of players become available in the transfer portal and really not make a decision on what they're going to do until after spring. But if a player like Kendrick wants to come here, given Georgia's need at cornerback, it's hard to imagine you having a better option available to yourself than a player like Kendrick.
And do you agree with my assertion that the fact that he was dismissed from Clemson, really, unless it was for something criminal or something like that, is actually not really all that interesting to me in this story? Because the reason why guys transfer anyway is because something's not quite perfect. If things were perfect, guys would not transfer. They're only available because something wasn't quite going right at their previous school, and you know, the, you know, levels of severity about what that is, you know, may vary. But you know, the notion that somehow he had a hard time at Clemson, if he didn't have a hard time at Clemson, he wouldn't be transferring.
Right. Well, and it was a surprise to many that he was even coming back to school this season. A lot of people thought he'd potentially enter the NFL draft. So I'll probably reserve judgment on that sort of topic and issue there until we sort of know more about why the official reason that he is leaving Clemson. But it shouldn't scare you off completely, because I think if it was something much bigger, such as a criminal activity or something along the lines of that, we'd have heard about it by now.
And on the Gilbert thing, listen, I obviously like him as a player. I have no reason to believe that he's coming to Georgia. I don't know what he's going to do. But this whole notion of he's got some things to figure out, that's been the whisper campaign that's been out there on that. I'm a big believer in life, whether you're a former five-star tight end or just some dude. I believe that motion creates emotion, and that if you want to change your emotional state, sometimes just making a change in your life is all that's needed to do that. And in Gilbert's case, when you make a choice to go live somewhere and you're unhappy, that can work on you a little bit. So, you know, I would certainly open up the possibility whether Gilbert, you know, goes anywhere, you know, wherever else, that just a change of scenery for him, in many cases, can be the kind of change that people need to kind of alter their emotional state there as well. So if Gilbert is truly having trouble, as the Whisper campaigns have suggested, sometimes a change of scenery is the only thing you really need to deal with all of
that. Yeah, let's not forget, he was an 18-year-old kid moving away from home for the first time, living in Louisiana, far away from home, friends and family, didn't really have that support system around him that he had grown accustomed to for really probably the first time in his life. And that's a difficult adjustment for anybody. So I think some compassion here is needed for Gilbert as he tries to sort of figure out what the next steps forward are for him.
And my hope is, beyond Gilbert, is, and I hate to turn anybody's story into a cautionary tale, but if you choose your college based on who was the hot team a year ago, the chances are you're going to be unhappy with the choice that you make.
Right, because, I mean, unless it's Alabama, it sort of fluctuates.
Seems like the hot team every year.
It fluctuates every sort of year. I will say there's one, you know, Gilbert, in following and covering his recruitment a little bit, he is not a loud person. He's quiet, reserved, and I think sometimes you see, we talk about this in other aspects, the absence of knowledge, the absence of people speaking clearly, of creating a certain narrative. In the absence of that, other people create narratives for you, and sometimes you lose the ability to control that a little bit. I think that's maybe a little bit what has happened here with Gilbert, because he is not a largely outspoken person in general. And I think because of that, there's a want for information on Gilbert, and other voices have filled that void.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. He's not choosing to tell his story in the media, and therefore, you know, it ends up being, you know, kind of told by somebody else. It's his choice to speak out or not, but when you don't speak out, all of a sudden, you know, people have a tendency to kind of become, you know, pretty imaginative with how, you know, rumors get spun and things like that. Let me just shift gears, though, and talk about something different as part of our Kirk Refresh take here for a moment. I'm a Georgia fan. I obviously want Georgia to win a national championship, and as kind of a I probably have a little Carnival Barker in my blood as it is. So I like hype, just generally speaking. You know, I would typically really enjoy it when Cole Kublik says, I think Georgia may be the best team in the country. Or as I mentioned before, Athlon Sports says, JT Daniels star on the rise. There's a part of me that kind of naturally enjoy stuff like that. But every single time this comes up, I sort of cite measurably, statistically, what the best offenses in college football have looked like the last few years. Multiple receivers either eclipsing 1,000 yards or knocking on the door of 1,000 yards. The average points per game, you know, Alabama last year nearly 49, LSU in 2019 over 45. It's great that people think that Georgia can be the very best team in the country, and obviously I view it as a possibility, but can we at least just continue to be very specific about how you define what best team in the country has been the last few years and how daunting that task is for Georgia or for anybody else?
So, yes, it's something Georgia's going to have to do over the course of an entire season, but at the same point in time, if they beat Clemson week one, they're going to be the number one team in the country week two. So it's something, you know, you do sort of have to grapple with. And I will say, you look at the numbers over the final four games of Georgia's 2020 season when Daniels took over at quarterback, the wide receiver numbers you were mentioning, they do project out over a 12-game slate. I believe Pickens would finish with about 1,100 yards, and Jermaine Burton would finish around that 900-yard
mark. That's a good point.
Though most of that with Burton comes off the 197 or 98-yard performance he had against Mississippi State there. So I think that, again, it's a four-game sample size. The defenses, other than Cincinnati, I don't think were all that great. And even in that Cincinnati game, you saw some things that were legitimately concerning from Georgia, and specifically their offensive line. And the strength of this Clemson team, it's their defensive line. So how Georgia goes about blocking those guys and playing up front, I think, is going to be very big in determining who wins that game. As far as what Kublik said, I will say, I think he's absolutely right when it comes to the SEC East. Georgia should not lose a game to an SEC East foe this year. I think they are pretty clearly, from a talent standpoint and from a returning production standpoint, head and shoulders above the rest of the league. Now, maybe Kentucky makes a step forward because I know they bring a lot of players back, but they have to figure out their quarterback situation. And, you know, I don't know at all what Florida's offense is going to look like, other than the fact that it's not going to look like what it did a season ago, because just Emory Jones and Kyle Trask are two completely different quarterbacks. So, you know, from what Georgia brings back, from the potential they have to improve off what they did at the end of the season, I think Kubelik's absolutely right in the sense that this team is head and shoulders above in the SEC East.
It's a Kroger Fresh Take with Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily here today. And don't forget, you can get low, low prices all over the store there at Kroger when you look for those yellow and red tags on sale. Great special products at low prices. Check out your local Kroger for, you know, a lot more on that. And listen, this is an obvious point, but look at the offenses that have really broken through, you know, for college football. I would say Alabama was even better in 2020 than they had been before. I give Steve Sarkisian a lot of credit for that. I give Joe Brady a lot of the credit for using some of the same talent from LSU in 2018, the breakout season in 2019. But for Clemson in 2018, which offensively it was way better than it had been in 2017, you probably do give more of that credit to the quarterback Trevor Lawrence stepping in because you had, you know, similar coaching staffs in place there. So what this speaks to is, to me, it comes down to, can the offensive coordinator get the most out of the quarterback? That's really how you do this. I obviously believe what Athlon Sports says, and I said before, what Cole says about Georgia is certainly a possibility. But, man, the spotlight for me is on Todd Monken to unearth all of this potential out of the natural resources that he has available to him there at UGA.
Yeah, and you and I have gone back and forth on this before. You're probably a little bit more pro-coach in terms of doling out credit, specifically on the offensive side of the ball, whereas I tend to be a little bit more pro-quarterback there. So, well, yes, Monken does need to open things up and I think get continued improvement and develop the players around him. George Pickens, I think, can still get better. Jermaine Burton as well. You look at the running backs, obviously the offensive line I've spoken at length about. With Daniels, it's some of the little things, those small things, those deep balls, specifically in that game against Cincinnati. Yes, he completed the 55-yard pass to Arian Smith and the 51-yarder to George Pickens. But if you go back and watch those plays, Pickens and Smith both had multiple steps on their defenders and they had to adjust to the ball to make a play on it. Those passes should have been touchdowns. I think going forward with Daniels, the thing that I want to see specifically on his deep balls is he making, you know, a good enough throw to be a big completion and turning that into touchdowns? Because we've talked at length about explosive plays. If you're scoring big touchdown plays, it just opens up everything else and makes things much, much easier for you and your offense.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and listen to Dog Nation Daily episodes from, like, say, 3 years ago, I probably wasn't as interested in the coaching part of this. Mm-hmm. I was probably a lot more of the belief that, hey, just get the most talented players and you guys can figure it all out. But we've seen, you know, really talented players sometimes not equal great offenses. And I would say we've seen coaches kind of really get a lot out of offenses. So my opinion on just how important the coaching part of all of this is has probably evolved a little bit in recent years. Let me kind of keep the conversation about quarterbacks going. I want to talk about a story that you've written at DogNation.com regarding ESPN's opinion of Georgia's quarterback hierarchy, a pecking order for the future. And it is kind of nice to see that I think Georgia was 11th on this list from ESPN a year ago, I believe number 6 now. And when you think about what's currently on the roster behind, you know, JT Daniels, Carson Beck, who's been here, Stetson Bennett, who's been here, obviously Brock Vandergriff, who's now on campus, with Gunnar Stockton waiting in the wings of the class of 2022, there's no doubt that the quarterback chaos that seemed to define Georgia from a couple of years ago, there is certainly a path forward for a lot more order in this quarterback room in the years to come. And whether it's as good as the very best team or, you know, not, it's certainly way better for Georgia than it was, I would say.
Yeah, 2021, I think you feel a lot better about what you have at quarterback than you did last year, and probably arguably any year that Kirby Smart has been at Georgia, maybe other than that 2018 team when you had Fromm returning and you were bringing in Justin Fields. But also, you mentioned chaos there. It's hard not to look forward and see a year from now, well, Georgia's going to have Carson Beck. It's going to have Brock Vandergriff. It's going to have Gunnar Stockton. How does that all play out? And what are the decisions and ramifications of that quarterback battle? Because I can guarantee you right now, at least one of those guys is probably going to transfer because he's not going to end up winning that starting job. I'm not in any way saying who that's going to be, but I think just looking at the way quarterbacks and quarterbacks transfer in recent seasons, if you don't win the job here, you're probably looking to go play somewhere else. So it's funny that you mentioned that. You know, yes, Georgia is in a good spot right now, and how things play out this season, I think, will go a long way in seeing how long that chaos can sort of be kept at bay.
So can we stipulate this for a moment, that given all the quarterbacks you just mentioned, one of those guys is eventually unhappy.
Yeah.
But I don't believe the presence of an unhappy quarterback necessarily means you have a chaotic quarterback situation. As a, for instance, Joe Burrow left Ohio State, went on to LSU, had one of the greatest seasons of all time. But Ohio State doesn't really get dinged for that because in the absence of Joe Burrow, Ohio State still had, I would say, good quarterback play, you know, first round pick and things like, you know, things like that at the quarterback position, that you can avoid chaos with an unhappy quarterback as long as the results that you get on the field are sufficient, and as long as people believe that the quarterback competition that generates a starter had some feel of legitimacy to it. Have a legitimate competition that produces a successful winner, and it doesn't matter how unhappy the loser is, and I use loser obviously, you know, euphemistically, it doesn't matter how unhappy the loser is, you still have order at quarterback as long as people believe in the competition and the competition produces a successful quarterback on the field.
So I agree with all of that. But when has Georgia under Kirby Smart never not had a chaotic quarterback situation? Other than, I guess, 2019 when it was literally only Jake Fromm that they could turn to, but 2016, Grayson Lambert, Jacob Eason, how they go about balancing that out. 2017, obviously, Fromm and Eason. 2018, Fromm and Fields. And then last year, obviously, three different starting quarterbacks. Until I think I see it otherwise, I want to see a maybe not properly, but a better managed quarterback competition over the course of an offseason first to sort of dispel the notion that Georgia is able to avoid chaos at the quarterback
position. Yeah, I mean, it's a great chance to show lessons learned. You know, when Justin Fields arrived in 2018, that was Smart's third year as a head coach. Anything that you're doing in year three in life compared to what you're doing in, say, year, what would be like seven, eight as a coach, I mean, the odds are you're just much more experienced and you've learned from your previous experience. So, I mean, listen, I'm like you. You know, until it actually plays out, you'll have a little bit of concern that this kind of veers in the direction of chaos again. But I'm assuming that Smart's like a lot of people, that you're just better at things your second or third time doing it, your seventh or eighth year doing it as you were your third year doing it.
Yeah, like you said, it's a chance to show that Kirby has learned some lessons from those early times in his tenure at UGA and that he has grown and gotten better as a coach, which I think sometimes we don't, you know, we give obviously players the benefit of that, like, hey, this guy's going to improve from year one to year two to year three, year four. Sometimes we don't always do that with coaches, and I think we perhaps should at least give them the opportunity to show, hey, I've gotten better since year X, and here's how I'm going to show you how to do that. And I think the quarterback position going forward is an example for Kirby Smart to do that.
I say this all the time, that this time of year gives you a chance to do things that in a busier news cycle you just wouldn't have a chance to cover. There are certain examples of that here on Dog Nation Daily for me. And a story that you wrote last week I think is an example of that too. This was not really on my radar, but I was glad you wrote this. And as I said before, in a busier news cycle, there just wouldn't be time for this. Kind of revisiting a year later, the hire of Scott Cochran as Georgia's special teams coach. And this is something that's, I think, really important to me. That this is an example of Kirby, not me just being a Georgia fan and, you know, Kirby's the Georgia guy here. This is an example, I think, of Kirby just kind of being a good dude. Cochran was clearly capable of professional advancement at Alabama. He was a strength and conditioning coordinator there for a long time. And Nick Saban just seemingly was unwilling to give him that professional growth opportunity. Georgia gave Cochran that here. There's no doubt his first year as special teams coordinator was a success, I think, measurably. He briefly showed up on the radar as a potential head coaching candidate at Vanderbilt, although I'm not really quite sure how real that was, but there were certainly plenty of media reports about this. This is just an example of, I think, Smart doing right by one of his friends, giving him a chance that Nick Saban wouldn't give him. And frankly, I think the media industrial complex should do a little more to kind of highlight the fact that when it comes to doing right by a longtime employee, Saban with Scott Cochran, Saban, I believe, kind of did him wrong.
I'm sure there are Alabama fans out there that are thrilled that Scott Cochran is no longer there, but it was clear that he was one of the best coaches from the way you heard former players talk about him. I remember asking Tua Tagovailoa about him last year. He spoke gushingly about him. Just about, you talk to any Alabama player that had played there under Cochran and Saban, they spoke glowingly about what Cochran was as a person, as a coach, as someone they could relate to and talk to and confide in. And, you know, kudos for Kirby for realizing, hey, I've got a spot here on my staff. I can open some doors for you. I think Cochran ultimately does want to be a head coach, and it'll be interesting to see what his avenue to that is, because traditionally special teams coordinators don't get hired all that often to be head coaches at the college level.
Unless you're John Harbaugh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it has actually happened a little bit more at the NFL level, but for Cochran, you know, obviously, and a lot of people brought up his recruiting prowess and saying, oh, well, how he relates to players, that's going to be really pay big dividends for the recruiting trail for Georgia. Hasn't exactly worked out that way just yet, but I think that's maybe a factor of how Georgia recruits and sort of Cochran taking some time to get into the way sort of Georgia goes about recruiting. He's never going to really be the primary guy in a lot of these guys because Georgia goes about recruiting guys based on their position coaches. But I think it's clear after 1 year with the improvements Georgia made on special team. Jack Budlesny, I don't think anybody expected him to have the season that he ended up having. Georgia first in the SEC in punt blocks, first in the SEC in kick returns of 30 and 40-plus yards. So I think they showed, at least on special teams last year, that Cochran pretty clearly knows what he's doing. And then all the intangible benefits that he brings to Georgia as well, I think are going to continue to show up.
So this to me is the example of exactly where this is all supposed to work. You know, I don't believe that Cochran will actually be at Georgia very long. I think that he'll move on somewhere else. And maybe that next step is the step towards becoming a head coach. But you get the advantage of having him while he's here. It's another example of Smart, I believe, identifying someone with very little experience who Smart believed had the chance to really be a coach at the SEC level. Normally, when Smart has made that move, it's really worked out. And, you know, the same way that you want to see Georgia players going and have great success in the NFL, you also want to see Georgia assistants kind of use this as a car wash, kind of come out on the other side as a better coaching candidate for professional development. I would say that the Smart, I use air quotes around this, coaching tree is kind of progressing pretty nicely here.
Yeah, you look at a guy like Shane Beamer, a guy who I think similarly had sort of strings attached to his coaching resume, obviously being the son of legendary Virginia Tech head coach Frank Beamer, had a certain stipulation with that. Took what he learned at UGA, went to Oklahoma to learn under an offensive-minded coach in Lincoln Riley, which I think is just the way it has to be nowadays. If you want to be a head coach, it's much easier to do it coming from an offensive background. And he was able to sort of tie the things that he had learned in there to becoming a head coach. And if he doesn't end up coaching at Georgia, I don't know if Shane Beamer is the head coach at Virginia Tech right now. And, you know, three, four, five years from now, when Scott Cochran maybe is at a Power 5 job of his own, we're probably saying similar things about Kirby Smart and his instrumentalness, if that's a word, in getting him to become a head coach there.
Connor, great stuff. Thanks for being here, part of our Kroger Fresh Take today. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com. By the way, news coming later on today. Kirby Smart going to be speaking to the media, a chance for Georgia fans going to hear his thought process here a couple of weeks before the start of spring practice. So that should be a ton of fun.
Yep. As always, it was a pleasure, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So as we said before, Smart today with reporters at some point in time this afternoon, a chance to hear some pretty fun stuff from him coming up. So chance to do that a little bit later on. I'm not quite sure what time all that is, but it's at some point today. And so it'll be fun to hear from Kirby Smart there on that. All right, let me get ready to transition here to our SEC Through. Before we do that, let me also remind you that on this program, each and every day, we do what's called the R.S. Andrews Cool Down. Now, this is kind of a video-only thing, although we do have, this is a little bit of breaking news. We have an R.S. Andrews Cool Down that's going to debut on podcast here pretty soon, which is going to be, I think, really, really fun. I'll tell you more about that in the time to come. But what the R.S. Andrews Cool Down is, it's a chance for me to take your comments. We talk on, you know, video, just about whatever's happened on the show, whatever's going on around college football. It's typically really fun. It's presented by our friends at R.S. Andrews. You know, the R.S. and R.S. Andrews stands for Rapid Service. Air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric. R.S. Andrews provides big service to you when it comes to all those systems. And by the way, it is not too early to start thinking about that air conditioning unit. You know, it's starting to get a little warmer. You can kind of get a little bit of a taste of spring in the air. That means air conditioning units are about to be used. It's always a little bit of a nerve-wracking thing when you turn that AC on for the very first time, knowing how hard it's going to be working in the warm weather season that's on the way. Is yours ready to go? Well, get the peace of mind that you need by getting your system tuned back up to factory fresh specs with my friends at R.S. Andrews. You can find them online at rsandrews.com. Let's transition here to our SEC Through, and I find myself having to repeat myself on something I've said before. Does Tennessee know that you can hire something other than a former Georgia assistant to have a role with your program? Now, maybe at this point in time, so many different coaches have coached Georgia over the last few years that maybe it's become kind of a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type thing where every assistant you potentially could hire worked at Georgia at some point in time. But former Georgia defensive assistant Mike Eckler looks like he's about to be hired as special teams coach there at Tennessee after the previous special teams guy at Tennessee left for South Florida for some reason. Maybe this is unfair. It's always a little tricky to kind of view something happening a couple hundred miles away and knowing exactly what's taking place. But boy, it sure does seem like Josh Heupel's grasping at straws for the early stages of his era there as Tennessee coach. The kind of streamlined, buttoned-up approach that someone like Kirby Smart took to Georgia, where you pretty clearly had a plan in place. You hit the ground running with that right away. All of this just sort of seems like plan B, plan C stuff for Heupel there at Tennessee. Listen, maybe he goes on to be the next great coach. I know that legendary pro wrestling broadcaster Jim Ross praised him. Heupel on the Paul Feinbaum show this week. So maybe that's something. Maybe good old JR likes what he sees there from Josh Heupel. But man, this is a very interesting rollout for him, and something that just kind of feels sort of haphazard there. But Eckler is not to say that Eckler's a bad coach. Don't get me wrong on that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that some of this does not exactly feel like it's a streamlined plan on the part of Josh Heupel, but maybe he'll surprise us. Speaking of surprises, this is not necessarily a huge surprise, although it'd be a pleasant surprise if it does play out this way. Greg Byrne, the Alabama athletic director, has become the latest AD within the league to say that he's expecting and certainly hoping for full stadiums later on this fall. Kind of joining, I think we talked about Ross Bjork, the Texas A&M athletic director, on this topic last week. Now, we don't talk about politics in the show. We never really will. And we don't really talk about the heavy news stuff that's going out there. But if you have been following the news as of late, I think one of the things that you'll join me in saying is the rollout of the vaccine seems to be going pretty well right now. That if you just think about this mathematically, a couple million, doses a day, that we're actually about to achieve a pace that could conceivably see all of us vaccinated by however long, sometime, maybe late spring, early summer, something along those lines. I'm not a mathematician. I'm not a epidemiologist, whatever you want to call it. So my opinion on this doesn't really matter all that much, but it certainly seems like that there's been kind of a little bit of a pickup of the good news related to all of this. So I would say that when it comes to fuller stadiums this fall, maybe even full stadiums at some point, I'm a lot more optimistic than I once was. I think the summer is going to be really instrumental in a lot of this. What do you see going on with, are there some big concerts that return? I think the presence of, I was just at Disney World. I think Disney World does a great job with their health and safety guidelines, social distancing, things like that. I think that Disney World kind of continues to lead the way on this. It's not a plug. I'm just saying that's a very big entity that's welcoming in a lot of people right now. Eventually, does Disneyland out in California loosen the reins on some of this kind of stuff? And I think WrestleMania is going to maybe have some fans coming up in a little bit. That some of these big benchmark spring and summer events may be making it a little bit easier for college football to find its way back to big crowds this fall, when by that point in time, a lot of us, if not all of us, at least seemed like we're on track for that vaccine there. So keep that in mind. Two other things here real quick. Saw Dan Mullen yesterday. Florida's been going through spring practice. There are a handful of SEC teams that have been. And Dan Mullen was talking a little bit about Emory Jones. I am just not quite so sure about the Emory Jones era at the University of Florida. Now, listen, you're more than free to take that with a grain of salt, given the fact that we've got, Gator hater paraphernalia all over the desk here. I totally understand that I am not a neutral source, objective source on some of this kind of stuff. But it certainly seems like the Jones era, Mullen was talking about his arm strength, things like that, and, some of the things have kind of gone on there. It certainly seems like the Jones era is a little bit of a work in progress. And just file this away. I'm not 100% sure by the time that the crucial games of the season take place, maybe even, Georgia against Florida and Jacksonville come October. Just keep your eye on someone like, say, Anthony Richardson, another quarterback there in that quarterback discussion, as potentially being a guy that earns some playing time. Jones has waited his turn, and this may be his time to thrive, and maybe he plays great. I would keep your eye on Anthony Richardson there in that Florida quarterback situation just a little bit. And then it's interesting, I'll finish with this. I talked about this yesterday. Sam Horn, the quarterback from Collins Hill up in North Gwinnett County that chose Missouri over Tennessee. It is really interesting to watch the fallout, from Vols fans in particular on this. Once again, as I said yesterday on the show, that Josh Heupel is supposed to be this quarterback guy, was a great quarterback at Oklahoma, offensive, coordinator at, Missouri, did some big things in the SEC, has kind of used that quarterback, brand to really open doors for him in coaching, and yet misses out on a quarterback here, a guy that was a former season ticket holder at Tennessee, I've been told Sam Horn was. I guess he wears the number 21, which was the number that Heath Shuler wore at Tennessee, and somehow that guy is going to Missouri here. That's another example of what I said before, that the rollout of the Josh Heupel era, certainly a little bit of a hiccup on that when you're losing out on quarterbacks to a guy like Eli Drinkwitz, who up until 5 minutes ago had no cachet within the SEC at all. So that's probably worth paying attention to as kind of all of this unfolds, and we'll make that your SEC through. So on the way out the door here, very good golden shoe today. For those of you that wonder, what is the golden shoe? Every single day on the program, we do a Gator Hater roll call. It's my chance to demonstrate not just my own Gator Hater credentials, but the Gator Hating credentials that many of you have as well. And a lot of you are good enough to share some of this with me on Twitter, my Twitter handle, @DogNationDaily. And you can share that with me there. How about our buddy Mad Dog, who is a multi-time winner here? He gives us a Rick Gilbert. It's kind of, is it Thanos from the Avengers movie? Gilbert kind of disappearing almost Thanos style. Dan Mullen left to wonder what's going on here. This is well done by our buddy Mad Dog. There's a reason why Mad Dog is stacking these golden shoes. So congratulations to you, Mad Dog. Another golden shoe goes into your virtual trophy case. We appreciate you participating in the Gator Hater roll call. By the way, speaking of Gator Hating, how about a Gator Hater countdown? 242 days from right now, we think Georgia gets a big dose of revenge against Florida. We'll see you tomorrow at Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.